Produkcja Studio Plac.
Hi, this podcast is brought to you by the Polish Debating Foundation, the National Museum in Lublin, and the Museum of Cultural History in Oslo. My name is Gabriel Manista.
And I am Konrad Kilian.
And today we join the voices of leading experts to cast some lights on challenges faced by archaeologists in Poland and Norway. Let's get started.
Where to find information about archaeological sites? What are the differences in heritage protection in Poland, Norway, and Ukraine? How to digitize archaeological heritage, and what are the consequences of the activities of amateur seekers?
These questions were the highlights of the debate on strategies for the protection, digitalization, and popularization of archaeological sites. 9 experts and amateurs from 3 countries took part in a special online event open to listeners from all around the world.
Diverse perspectives and experiences provide us with an overview of this complex matter and allow us to focus on the most interesting details at the same time.
We invite you to explore archaeology with us.
So we are here today to talk about legal and illegal activities of amateur seekers. And we assure you that this topic is not only controversial, contemporary, but it has broad implications for people working in museums and trying to be a part of what the experts are doing all over the world. In fact, illegal trade of archaeological artifacts is immensely popular. It is now being challenged by some legal experts. It also opens the door for cooperation between institutions, and we'll talk about some pretty controversial, pretty shocking examples of how people are interacting with the archaeological artifacts. So we think there is like a lot to unpack today. And we would like to start right off the bat with real life examples, real life cases, because it's just puts you into the perspective of people actually trying to find something connected with the history, trying to understand it, and seeing it from their perspective allows us to see why some regulations are so necessary to protect the heritage that we have. So we'll start with Radosław Nowak, who's the leader of Passion Association, and he is really passionate about finding artifacts. And let's hear how he sees the legal framework for finding artifacts and how it has changed in the recent decades.
The history of amateur activities is full of real gems. I will only mention a few. One of the most interesting projects I took part involved tracking an armored vehicle from World War II. Such vehicles are extremely rare. The investigation itself took 8 years, but it resulted in a vehicle excavated in 2000. It was possible thanks to the Museum of the White Eagle and the late director Andrzej Lange, who was passionate about armored weapons. The Stuk 32 was a self-propelled vehicle. Although it's a wreck, it is precious, as there are only 3 such pieces known in the world today. That's why I believe it to be the most interesting story. Another marvel is a Search Without Borders project in the UK, in which I participated several times. Once I discovered a Celtic coin nearby Compton. It was 2,500 years old, making it so valuable that the Chichester Museum asked to donate it to the collection. It had traces of metallurgical silversmith. It was made of bronze, so it's pretty valuable, although it doesn't look spectacular. I was happy about it, and I had the satisfaction that something I discovered got displayed at the museum. In recent years, I enjoyed the research of the early medieval mountain settlement in Hoylik. Now, our cooperation is already in its 5th season. The research resulted not only in new artifacts that challenge beliefs about the exact dates the fortified settlement existed, but it was something more than coins. We really restored the climate of antiquity in Grodzisk. It was not just joy, but euphoria. I believe that our cooperation should be legally regulated on the basis of this experience. One more story. I was invited as one out of 25 Poles to explore the fields of Grunwald. All Poles know about the famous battle that took place there in 1410. The research was international and included Norwegians, Germans, and Danes, coordinated by a Polish director. Our research took place in the fields, with the task of checking the Swedish professor Ekdahl's thesis. He speculated that the battle took place quite far from where others believed it to happen. After a week, it turned out that he was right. The artifacts from the battle confirmed it. We found much more artifacts than the 50 years of earlier standard surveys. I took part in 3 seasons of such exploration. It resulted in a lot of beautiful friendships from all over Europe. It also gave us ideas for similar groups for people with real passion. We might cooperate on normal research, but also serve as quick response groups when rescue or help is needed.
There's many activities that we can see and we can hear about the legal activities of amateur seekers in the field of archaeology. And as we hear, there has been a lot of friendship, a lot of passion between the people that are involved in these activities. But when it comes to the illegal seekers, we also have some examples of it. And Konrad, can you tell me what's about this black market and what's about the illegal seekers?
That's right. There is a dark side of this phenomenon. So some people are trying to make a profit, and there is a lot of people willing to pay good money for having something, whether it had been acquired legally or not. So just on Facebook, just in 2019, there existed 95 different groups of people doing it on Marketplace or some other subgroups that included 2 million people who were selling and buying archaeological artifacts. It was just so difficult to keep track of it, to see who's doing it legally or not, that Facebook, who's like not the first player in the world to try to regulate something, they in 2020 decided to prevent these future trades. And now you cannot sell archaeological artifacts on Facebook officially, right? So if you tag it as an archaeological artifact, you will have harder time doing that. But it doesn't stop people from trying, of course.
Of course, as you said, there's a dark black market and black ships. And about these black ships, when it comes to the amateur seekers in Poland, we've got some story that's going to be shared with you. And the story is from Bartłomiej Bartecki, the director of Museum in Hrubieszów in Poland.
I will firstly refer to the problem of the archaeological artifacts market. I cannot give details of places and names because it is a secret of the forensic investigation, but I myself participated in proceedings where someone who robbed archaeological sites sold them around the world. After searching their apartment, it turned out that there still were materials that he had not been able to sell. But in addition to this, over 500 proofs of postage items from all over the world, from Japan to the United States and Australia. So it's actually a large-scale process. We are aware that many valuable items have been stolen from our country. The market is still on the rise. As for popularization, there are good and bad consequences. Let's start with good ones. We have an astonishing increase in sensational archaeological phenomena. When I started work at our museum 15 years ago, we had 1 or 2 bronze bracelets from the Iron Age, and now, thanks to the sustainable cooperation with explorers, there are really a lot of materials every year. We are now able to quickly collect and publish these materials. As for our recent work, apart from surface research and accidental discoveries by farmers or builders, a lot is done by amateur prospectors. If it wasn't for them and their trust towards us, hundreds of objects would not come to light. Thanks to their work, we are really rewriting textbooks. It's also about saving heritage. I live in an agriculture area where everything in the soil has long been destroyed by plowing. If it is not touched by the prospectors, it will be destroyed by the farmers. More and more archaeologists trust detectors and vice versa. But apart from that, society sees the benefits of cooperation with science and enthusiasts. But there are also bad consequences. I trust and praise those who help us, but there are those who do harm. Some choose archaeological places on purpose to loot. It's a problem of information availability. Sometimes our documents are treated as treasure maps and robbing starts. We recently worked at the area where one farmer discovered 5.5 kilograms of silver. A week ago, after we presented the findings at conferences, someone tried to collect a few more coins from the same place. There are black sheep that want to enter the area once we disappear from it. Sometimes we work in the field, 7 to 18, and looters come after us at night with a flashlight, trying to take something out. There are not many such people, but they cast a shadow on those who want to act responsibly. Some seekers are ashamed of this title because many build trust for many years, and someone jumps in and spoils it because of one situation. As for the dissemination, I see that there are a lot of associations operating legally. Very often, they want to gain fame. There is a race of associations. Who will find more and better treasure? Who will be praised by a museum or a local government? This is healthy competition. We get a lot of information. And they devote their time and energy to satisfaction, which we don't have. The Minister of Culture should also appreciate such people. So there are many good cases, but the bad ones hurt.
So we see that it is an ongoing process and new attempts at regulating it are in place and different conceptions are being discussed. But we might also try to think for a minute about the broader historical perspectives of acquiring artifacts and trying to display something. So we are talking about people doing it illegally to have something on their own at their place to show off to their friends or have their place.
Like a private collection.
Nice. Yes. But in fact, there are many controversies regarding what there is exhibited at some museums as well. Of course, there are examples of European museums that are filled with artifacts acquired either legally by, well, controversial decisions. Like, can we really say that people selling their national heritage in the middle of 19th century knew what they were doing? Have they been paid a fair share? And is it right to keep it just because someone signed a legal document possessing rights to have a national heritage at their own? And this is an ongoing discussion, right? We have this is in the United Kingdom, in Germany with in Benin France. Bronzes, in France as well, Sweden also.
So
our common neighbors as a Polish-Norwegian program, we know that there are some artifacts that are on display that were Polish like in the 16th century. So it is controversial whether or not something had been legal at some point. We might also question, should it be a part of our common regulations, or maybe it's your right to have something that your ancestors produced, right? And we know that this lack of control and care over our collections had been already challenged, and there were attempts to regulate it in the future as well,
yes.
Right?
Yes, and you are right. That's hopefully we've got this discussion opened. It's ongoing question how it should be, but the attempts of regulating it is really in a good place right now, I would say. From the 70s, we are trying to build the new policy landscape when it comes to the illegal and like acquiries of the artifacts. And I would say that the best way to introduce this subject is to give the floor to Agnieszka Stachyra, a specialist from the Archaeological Monuments Inspection Department in Poland. And Agnieszka will tell us more about the destruction and looting of archaeological sites and how is it regulated in Poland right now. So let's hear.
I will start with highlighting the legal aspect of the situation in Poland about the sought-after monuments. Searching for abandoned and hidden archaeological monuments with the use of any electronic devices, such as detectors or neodymium magnets, requires obtaining the permission of the Voivodeship Monuments Conservator. Contrary to popular opinion, this is not a big problem. In our office in Lublin, one just needs to submit an application and obtain the consent of the owners of the land to enter their property. There are no qualifications or experience required. It's different than becoming an archaeologist. As conservators, we look at amateurs favorably, trying to help and explain the necessary steps. We also popularize positive behaviors on the internet, for instance on Facebook, where we share the most interesting finds. In Poland, You do not need a permit to search for meteorites, coins, or bracelets, but units that do not have a time sensoria are the property of the state treasury. We see many cooperating enthusiasts, collectors, and unfortunately, the third group, those looking for illegal trade. There is also the threat of destruction, even with legal activities. One can destroy objects by trying to excavate it unprofessionally. It is also difficult to not change the layering next to the objects. Such actions destroy the archaeological context necessary for some research. As for criminal aspects, much changed since 2017, when the amendment to the Act on the Protection of Monuments was enacted. Now, searching without consent is treated as a crime, punishable even by imprisonment. Prior to that, it was only a misdemeanor, and the police treated such people more leniently. These changes mean more applications for our office, as most people do not want legal problems. Our popularization of good attitudes also causes people to report. We see that they want to contact and to act legally. Collections are a separate issue. Hobbyists often create something at home, saying it's better for the objects to be kept at their place than in the ground. We see it as a misunderstood protection of heritage. After the death of such a seeker, the family often does not know what to do or is afraid to give it to the office or museum for fear of penalties for possession. In such cases, people unknowingly throw objects away or pass them on for scrap. 2 years ago, a museologist reported that he had found a part of a collection of medieval axes in a scrapyard, sold for scrap by the family of the deceased.
So we've told you that it is a complex issue. We just heard an overview from the Polish expert, but it's very interesting to see how this matter is dealt with in different countries. Now, Professor Marta Spangen from Oslo will tell us about the approach that has been adopted in Norway.
Yes, I'll try to summarize it quite quickly, but I think that what I'm hearing from Poland shows that we are dealing with much the same kind of communities of metal detectors in both countries that are not necessarily uniform, but you have people who have different motivations for doing this. And at the same time, we're also trying to do much the same as was described in Poland, that we're trying to have a good communication with detectorists and trying to have a common project and so on and see this as a resource more than as a threat. But there's been a big discussion in Norway for the last 10 or 15 years between different opinions among archaeologists, but also very much between professional archaeologists and the detectorists. I think we're moving in a direction where that is more amicable now, and we have more cooperations, so that's very good. And then I have to say that I've actually just been in this job for 6 weeks, so I don't really have my own projects yet, but we do have very interesting examples of projects that have involved private detectorists who have helped out in different, or who have initiated as well projects that have been interesting archaeologically. And then I just wanted to mention that I think I can't remember if it was Agnieszka who was mentioning it, but I think it's important to look into the whole problem of looting. As I said, in Norway, we have quite strict legislation, we have quite strict policies, and we also have a quite transparent society. And as time has moved on, we also have very well organized societies of metal detectorists who are sort of the eyes on the ground, who are actually observing who are out there and who are doing things. So to my knowledge, we don't really have that many examples of looting per se, but we do have, of course, unfortunate incidents, and we do have some issues where we are looking into what's going on from time to time. But for the most part, my impression is that this is a fairly orderly system at the moment. What I think sort of ties all our countries together when it comes to looting and the problem with looting is that there is actually a market for this. So you have to look at it perhaps from a different level than just the problem with the occasional rotten apple or people who are out there doing bad things, but also the fact that you have a gigantic market for this. And this is, of course, an international problem that should be discussed further. I would like to mention that we do have a research group here at the museum who are working with exactly that kind of issues. But of course, there are also loads of other international networks and corporations to try to get to this problem as much as we can. And I think that's kind of what binds our countries together in this discussion, that this is why we have this kind of looting at all. Yes, so I'll just mention that, again, we're trying to develop now further cooperations with the detectorist communities. That is kind of what I'm here to do. And I'm hoping that we will develop that in a direction of community research, where you have the opportunity as a detectorist to be involved in the whole process and not just find things and hand them into the museum, but actually be in the process of helping us define what are the interesting research questions, for instance. And that also includes, which I may get back to afterwards, digital solutions for actually sorting out this fine registration. So I'll just mention one example of a cooperative project that is actually going on right now, which is at a place called Sem, a farm in a county, or well, former county, but it's called Buskerud, where you have, you know, that there's a royal estate from historical sources, but based on detectorist finds, it has also become clear that this must have been a central place much further back in time, back to the Iron Age probably. And it's now being investigated in a kind of interesting cooperation between detectorists, but also because they are doing some draining of the fields there, there has to be a rescue excavation, and then there's also a research excavation related to the detectorist finds. So that's one example that is ongoing right now. But as I said, I'm hoping that we'll develop this into a more systematic approach to how we involve the detectorists in our work, so that it's not just sort of occasional projects that are not really interlinked. But that's for the future. Thank you.
So as we see, the situation is getting better. Cooperation is in place and there is less looting, although it will still be a challenge in the following decades. So we need the experts to exchange the ideas and their experiences and to propose some solutions.
Yes, in addition to that, we need experts to introduce this subject to policymakers to make this subject, this matter, more regulated by law.
And of course, discussing issues and gathering perspectives from all over the world is necessary. And we hope that this episode had been a small step in that process. So thank you for that. And we hope to see similar discussions in the future.
This podcast was produced as part of the project Heritage Accessible, professionalization of cultural workers and dissemination of cultural heritage, the interdisciplinary partnership of the National Museum in Lublin and the Museum of Cultural History in Oslo, co-financed by the European Economic Area Financial Mechanism.
Produkcja Studio Plac.